What I want to do is I want to share sort of my story in engaging the dark cloud and what that did. And then we'll take a break, but in that break, I want to encourage you to actually agree in your hearts that you want to engage it. Because if you don't want to engage it and you're not ready to engage it, really don't. Because it is something that you have to be in agreement with, because it can be difficult and it can set you off on a process. If you can go through it tonight, we'll do the second session and actually separate in soul and spirit, and we'll actually activate that, and we'll use the bowls and different things to break the sever the connections within your soul and spirit. But if you go through it in that one thing, awesome. But it often sets off a process. When I did it in the intensive at home, Nikki was there and she's still in it. And that was in April. But depends really on how quickly you surrender and, you know, what it is that God wants to do in that process. And it's different for everyone. But I'll sort of share my journey in it. I went from engaging my spirit and my spirit gates, and I was learning to see these spirit gates, and sometimes you find familiar spirits sat outside of those spirit gates. And I didn't have any because I'd done a lot of work in my life and over the previous years, and so I didn't have any. But then people started to tell me, well, I can't get through my spirit gate. Something's blocking it on the other side. And I'm like, oh, what's that? So I said, God, well, what is that? Why are people saying they can't go through their gates because there's something outside? He said, well, that's where familiar spirits sit. They can sit when you've operated in the flesh, in the realm of those things that the spirit gates represent, then familiar spirits occupy that because you've given them permission. So often fear of God and reverence, when a familiar spirit activates in there, it operates legalism, because religious spirits love legalism. So the fear of God can become a legalistic thing, and it actually can produce fear, because it's not supposed to produce fear, it's supposed to produce awe and reverence. So reverence is like, you can end up in bondage. You know, it's like, I'm afraid of doing anything because I don't want to get it wrong and all that stuff. So, what was that? Oh, well, that's because that's not on. Okay. Hopefully it'll come up. So, you know, what I found was that often people had operated in certain things which facilitated that. Hopefully it will come on in a second. Let's see, is it coming on? No, it is on. It just needs... Oh, it needs me to connect with it, I think, for some reason. Let's try connecting. Extend. There you go. Seems to go. Okay. There we go. So this was a picture that, as I began to work through this, I began to work through all the spirit gates, walk with God through them, understand them, and then when I started to help other people, they started talking about, well, they were blocked or they couldn't get through them. And I said, well, they're your spirit gates. Nothing can block them, but actually these things sit outside trying to block it. And they just sort of function in that way. And as I then sort of followed through in the garden of my heart, I went through a process where I discovered there was the dance floor and the soaking room and the bridal chamber, which was a process of deeper and deeper intimacy. And sometimes you can obviously have things that operate in your soul gates as well. So conscience can produce guilt and shame if it's operating from the familiar spirits that are counterfeiting reverence and fear of God. So a lot of things like that. You can get memories in your imagination and mindsets. So I started to work through that whole process. And you know, you can deal with all those familiar spirits. You can use court cases. You can get rid of them all. So you can start to get a flow. And you can deal with those things in your soul. You know, it does take time. It is a process. You have to work it through. But ultimately, you want a flow from the inside out. And as I then began to engage in this intimacy thing, it was like sort of the four chambers of the heart represented these aspects of marriage. The garden, the lakar of marriage, which was in the Hebrew setting, you know, I'm looking into your eyes and it's like, you belong to me. you're the one I'm looking at. I mean, and it's a God looking at us saying, hey, I love you. You know, you're mine. And then you have the Sagala, which is the sort of representing the dance floor. And you get it going a bit further than that, is you are my treasured possession. And if you really know that you're God's treasured possession, it really changes how you feel about yourself and how you view yourself. And then you get the mikveh, which is the preparation, the soaking room, and there's oils and there's frequencies within that soaking room. The sounds of heaven start coming around you and they start penetrating you and they start preparing. Like Esther went through the process of oils in preparation to come into the king. She went through a 12-month process, or she would have done if it didn't get short-circuited. But she focused. And, you know, I've engaged with Esther a number of times recently in that she showed up and I started to talk to her and I said, well, why are you here? She said, well, I'm here to remind people that they're called for a time such as this, just like I was. And I had a whole sort of dialogue with her and how she wasn't expecting what happened. And she wasn't almost prepared for it. But Jesus has prepared us to engage in intimacy with God. He's already made the way. And then you go through this ketubah, which is a marriage contract terms, which they went through. And then eventually they would cover under a hoopah, a covering, they would enter the bridal chamber, having made their marriage vows and everything else. And when we did this, we actually eventually made marriage vows, and we went through a process of people wrote their own vows before God and, hey, I'm entering into this thing. But it was the ketubah which really set off this process. So in 2010 to 2012, I went through a two-year season where I was operating in being transformed. I just focused on my gateways, I focused on transformation, I looked at my DNA, I looked at having DNA cleansed. You know, I went into all the things because I just wanted nothing in my life which would be a hindrance for me continuing to grow in intimacy and with relationship with God. And then God started to take me through this process. And, you know, it was being discipled. You know, that was it. Jesus was discipling me because I walked with him. I wasn't walking with the Father at that point in time in this. It was Jesus. He walked with me and I learned to follow that process. And I walked through the relationship. And eventually that relationship led me on to responsibility. But that was at a level that needed dealing with, because I couldn't go any further. So he took me through this process. It wasn't a random sort of process of transformation. It was like going through a marriage. And I was preparing for marriage. I was preparing to leave singleness behind. And, you know, any of you have been married, you know, being married is very different from being single. And you have to adjust your thinking when you're single. Essentially, you choose to please yourself. You can't do that when you're married. You have to be the best husband or the best wife you can be, and that means adaptation to the relationship. And the same with God. You know, I don't want to be single. I don't want to have independence. I want to be intimately, completely joined to the Lord. You know, 1 Corinthians 6:17 said, he who is joined to the Lord is one spirit with him. And, you know, it isn't a fleshly thing, but it is a spiritual thing. And when that verse in 1 Corinthians 6:17 says, being joined to the Lord, it's actually related to being joined to a prostitute, you become one flesh. And then it says, well, actually, you can be joined to the Lord and one spirit. So it's that level of intimacy that's really deeply intimate. And I had to go through the process to prepare me for that because I didn't know what it was about. God just took me on this journey. So literally it was preparation for this dark cloud experience. So I went through these soaking rooms and dance floors and I was there, but I didn't enter the bridal chamber because I hadn't done a ketubah. And then God spoke to me and said, you need to do a ketubah. So I thought, oh, okay, I'll do a ketubah. So I wrote down this ketubah and that really started to really do something. And the whole purpose was so I could meet God face to face, you know. So on my ketubah, there were 68 points. You know, I'm pretty thorough when I do things. So I tried to make it as broad as possible in all the things that I would need to fulfill my destiny. My commitment to God was, hey, I'm totally surrendered to my destiny, but my expectation is that you will be able to give me everything I need to fulfill it. And so I put 68 things that I expected for me to be able to fulfill my destiny. And it was like so broad, I thought, this is going to last me for the rest of my life. Well, once I went through the process, I looked at it, and I didn't teach this for 4 years. God wouldn't let me teach it. He wouldn't let me teach it back at home. I went through the process, and it was like, if I taught it, I knew it was going to trigger this process in others, and I knew they weren't ready. So God wouldn't let me do it. But eventually, I said, well, look, I need to teach this, so I'm going to give you a health warning. If you embrace this, it may trigger something in your life. So if you want to do it, that's great, but you've got to go through this process. And then God showed us a part of our scroll, our book at home. I saw a page where we were invited to engage in a marriage ceremony with God as a church. And it was just like, oh, okay, great. So I brought this, and we held it for 3 years because we weren't ready. We did various things in that 3 years, but eventually we got to the point where God said, now's the time. So New Year's Eve in 2016, we did this marriage ceremony. So as a church, we produced a ketubah, and all of our mountains produced a ketubah, and everyone wrote their vows before God, and it was a really thing, and we celebrated it. We had a marriage wedding feast, and you know, did the whole thing. I had a hooper and a covering, and went through the whole real, sort of went into it. But I knew it was going to trigger something, because he was inviting us to come into marriage, and you can't be independent when you're married. So it was a challenge. So the marriage contract can become a performance-orientated legalistic thing if we don't deal with our soul. You know, you don't bring your marriage vows every morning and remind your husband or wife what their obligations are. You know, and because I don't think it would go down too well. Because actually, it reminds you of what your obligations are, in the sense of, I want to be the best husband. I can't demand my wife be the best wife. That's her responsibility in the marriage. But if I come out and say every day, I want you to be the best wife today, and you need to do this, and I want this, and this, and this, it's like, that wouldn't really give a good relationship. And it's the same with God. We can't go making demands of God. It's our responsibility to surrender to our destiny. He promises if we seek first the kingdom, he'll give us everything else. And you can expect everything else and frame everything else, but you don't go and use it in a non-relational way. But I didn't really get that. I just thought, great, I've got all these things God's going to do now. You know, because I hadn't dealt with my soul in it. So, you know, in this whole process, you know, it's a flowing from relationship and not from dead works and not trying to earn God's favor or anything like that. Marriage is very different. So I remind myself of my ketubah. Now, when I went through the process, eventually I just burnt it and offered it up to God. And I didn't teach it for 4 years. And then when I looked at it, I actually found I was living all of it. Everything that I put, which was way out, in 4 years, I was actually living all of that because it was part of me. And my spirit was living out of the expectation of those things. So I was using it to frame what I thought, how I spoke, what I did, what I legislated for in heaven. So it really was a powerful thing, but it did take me through this process, and it triggered it. So, you know, love is about giving and not receiving. God so loved the world, he gave. Not God so loved the world that we demanded that we love him. He just gave his love unconditionally to us, and he wants that love to provoke us to love him. Not by demand, or not by fear, or not by obligation, but because we want to love him, because we know he loves us. So that really was part of my preparation for this whole thing. So it triggered the process, and it was like this whole dark cloud thing. It was like blowing this cold wind from the north, and I was engaging winds of change, and all of a sudden I was in this place, and I was in worship a number of times. I was engaging with those four angels during this process, and engaging, sort of looking at the Joshua generation, how we could help get people out of the wilderness and transition across into the promised land. And so all this was part of it. So then I went through this process, 2011 to 2012. And I had various encounters with a dark cloud. I was in worship, and I found myself in thick darkness. It wasn't fear-inducing, because I knew God was in the middle of it somewhere, but I couldn't get to him. I was like, how do I wade through this darkness that I can't really engage? because I knew God was in the dark cloud. And you have this scripture in Genesis 15, Abraham fell into sleep and this whole terror and great darkness fell upon him. And God was in that. You know, Deuteronomy 4:11, the mountain burned with fire, the very heart of the heavens, the darkness and cloud and thick gloom. Now that, you know, I don't really sort of have any issue that the children of Israel didn't want to go into it. Having been in it, it's a scary thing in one sense. And even I knew the love of God, and I wasn't coming out of slavery like they were. I'm not surprised that they sent Moses, but it was sad that they did. But we have lots of scriptures. You know, he made his darkness his hiding place, his canopy around him, darkness of waters, thick clouds of the skies, from the brightness before him passed into his thick clouds. Psalm 18. Psalm 97, clouds and thick darkness surround him. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. So it's a very biblical thing, but you just don't expect to really engage it, do you? I mean, it's one of those things, well, yeah, God's in there, but I want to see him. I don't want to go through some dark cloud. I want to see him. But actually, he dwells in the dark cloud to protect us. Because if you look into his face unprepared, I wouldn't want to do it. I looked in his face eventually prepared, and it was literally the most awe-inspiring thing that I'd ever seen. And I could only look at one little bit. I remember Ian Clayton said, don't look into his eyes. Don't look into his eyes. And I was thinking, I'm not going to look into your eyes. So I think I focused on one sort of diamond fragment in his face. And I'm like, that was enough to completely fry me. So I'm back out of it. Having gone for months to get through this thing, I'm in there for seconds. Because I just couldn't cope. I thought, whoa, how could I live in this place? What would I need to do to live in this place? But, you know, it was all there. So I went into these set things in worship, and I had these experiences. And I asked God this, 3rd of May, 2011, and I journaled it. I found myself saying this, not consciously. I didn't decide to, I just said it. And then when I said it, I thought, what have I said? I said, Father, how do I meet you in the fire and the smoke? Now, that was totally prompted by my spirit and not my soul. Because my soul would have not said that. But I said it, and God replied, Son, you've met me with my presence, but you've not been hungry and thirsty enough to come where I am within the thick cloud. So I thought, well, how do I get... I think I'm as hungry as I could possibly be. But not according to God. So he says, you have held back, you've been fearful. So I was like, I'm not fearful. I don't think I'm fearful. Well, I soon found out the reality of that situation when my soul engaged. My spirit was up for it, having come from eternity and, you know, going back to eternity, but this was the soul. So you've not been ready to surrender everything. If you really want to come, you can, but you'll never be the same. So I thought, okay, you can't act the same. You must want to come above all else. You must need to come. Well, I didn't need to come. And actually, I didn't really want to come. You know, even though I'd asked the question, I didn't want the answer. Because my soul was now, having been in this dark cloud, it was like, I'm not sure I want to go through this. But Jehovah Sneaky had other things on his mind. And he said this, you have too many encumbrances to come. They anchor you to the world. You must be willing to have them dissolved away. You have been far too comfortable. Well, I'd just been in heaven for 2 years, engaging in all sorts of things. I didn't think I was comfortable, but when I found out, I was. So, literally, it says, Son, I fear that you, if you come now, you would not go back. So prepare yourself, discipline the flesh, discipline your mind, surrender your emotions again, and I will welcome you in to see me. So I'm like, discipline. Discipline the flesh. Do I really want to? I'm really disciplined. I am disciplined. You know, I'm a pretty disciplined person. I don't have a problem, you know, getting up and spending time with God and anything like that. But this sounded like this is more than what I'm already doing. I don't understand. So I had 3 encounters on 3 Sundays in this dark cloud. And then I had an encounter on the 6th of October. I was lost in the presence of God in worship. I was on the dance floor. I was enveloped with this curtain of color, and there was these angels and all this stuff was going on, and God said, I want you to spend the next 4 months with me in the garden, the dance floor, in the soaking room, in the bridal chamber. So I thought, oh, awesome, You know, spending a 40 days fast, that was awesome. That changed my life. I thought, 4 months with God, this is going to be great. And I didn't associate them. You know, I just didn't associate this with the dark cloud. And so I made the marriage contract in all this sort of time, and I wanted to take it into the dark cloud and all this stuff. So, and then he said to me on the 20th of February, 2012, this will be your breakthrough day. So I thought, oh, great. Okay, 4 months leading up to that, I'll go for that. You know, and I was okay about it. And I had really high expectations of what was going to happen. And I had an encounter with my scroll. And I was again in worship, and I was just completely lost in it. And I was suspended from reality of what was around me. And I saw my scroll, and it opened up. And on this scroll, there was this beautiful blue flame. And as I looked at it, I just knew that's an eternal flame. I don't know how I knew that, other than my spirit knew it. So that's the eternal flame. And it was like, and then I saw all my life leading up to this flame, and then afterwards I saw everything different. So I thought, oh yeah, this is going to be great. So I said, yes, I'll engage for 4 months. And this was in October, so. Essentially, I was in a really secure place, so I thought, because I just spent all these days in heaven engaging things and everything else. But then God decided to test the source of my security and therefore the source of my identity. And that was the challenge for me. Now, I didn't know this consciously. It wasn't something I would have been aware of. But he was, and he wanted to set me free so I could be free to go further and higher and in different realms of heaven and everything else. So November the 11th came along. November 2011, first day, get up in the morning, I'm really excited, I think I'm going to engage the garden in a new dimension, and I was really excited, and I was like, couldn't see anything, couldn't hear anything, I'm in total darkness. Now, having spent every day for 18 months or more in heaven, this was a shock, and I wasn't expecting it. So I was like, well, what are you doing, God? You promised me something. You promised if I spend these time with you, I'm going to enter into something. All I heard was, be still. That's all I heard, be still. Why do I need to be still? Now, for the last 18 months, being still was just no problem. Now I was told to be still, I couldn't. My soul kicked off. I just couldn't. And what he did, my spirit had been built so strong that it was able to rule the soul most of the time. So he took the power of my spirit away, and he left me with my soul. That was it. No spirit to intervene. So literally, for that whole month, every question that my soul needed an answer for, I bombarded God with. And what did I get back? Nothing. I wanted to know, why? Why can't I see anything? What are you doing? Why are you doing this to me? You promised me this, and now I'm going through this. And everything was just the reaction of my soul, because now I couldn't see. And I was getting my identity because I could see. So this was who God made me to be. He called me to do this, but now he was challenging, what is the source of your security and what is the source of your identity? I was getting it from what I was doing. And I was doing nothing wrong. This wasn't doing anything wrong, but I was doing it from the motivation of my heart that fed me and fed my identity in my soul. So this was a real challenge. Now we know all these scriptures, be still and know that I'm God. And I knew that scripture, but I didn't care. It's like, I don't want to be still. So I want to know what you're doing and why are you doing it? And I really, really went off into this. And it was a month which was really, really hard. And I was frustrated and angry, and God wouldn't say anything. So I'm like, I really don't get it. So I thought, okay, what's going to happen next? You know, so there was lots of scriptures that sort of came to me in terms of, you know, God is my refuge and my fortress, in whom I trust. Well, I didn't trust him. Obviously I didn't, because if I trusted him, I wouldn't have needed to know what he was doing. I would have trusted what he was doing was a good thing, but it didn't feel very good. So I discovered that my trust of God was dependent on whether I knew what he was doing. Then I trusted him, because I knew what he was doing. And when I didn't know what he was doing, I didn't trust him. So God was testing me. Do you trust me, or don't you trust me? Do you just trust me when you're seeing, when knowing? Or what if you don't see and know, do you still trust me? Am I still your dad? Well, obviously not, for my soul. So my soul failed the test absolutely miserably, which was what the test was for, to show me what my soul would be like without my spirit. And actually, my spirit shouldn't be ruling my soul. My spirit and soul should be working together, cooperating. But my spirit was so strong that most of the time my soul didn't really have a thing. So God said, right, you can't cover it up with your spirit. You need to deal with it. So this was hard. So I really did need to know what God was doing, you know, and it was such a hard thing. And I didn't trust him, and everything was really, really challenging. So then I thought, December, it's going to be better. And it wasn't. It was like, I'm going on the dance floor. And I was like, I can't see anything. I can't do it. And I was waiting for the joy of the Lord to be my strength and all this. And all I heard was, wait. I said, wait. Why do I need to wait? What am I waiting for? What's the point of waiting? I've been waiting for a month. Now I've got to wait for another month. And I just lost it. And God was just smiling away, I guess. I couldn't see him. But I sort of sensed that he wasn't too fussed with my arguments and protestations and everything else. And he was just saying, hey, you wanted to deal with this? You wanted to go into the dark cloud? Well, here you are. You know, so it's like, those who wait on the Lord will renew their strength. Well, I knew the scriptures, and it was like, bleh, don't care. You know, it was just like, you know, and these were sort of, you know, these scriptures are part of me. I know them. But it's like my soul was like, I don't want to know. You know, so it's like I was trying to engage my spirit, but I couldn't, because God sort of just didn't let me do it. And it was a difficult thing. You know, the joy of the Lord is your strength. Well, no, it isn't. It wasn't. And I was not feeling joyful. And I wasn't feeling very strong. You know, so it was like, wait, do nothing, see nothing, know nothing. Well, it was just not good enough. So about 2 weeks into that month, it's just like I'd had enough. You know, it's like, you know, what God was saying was, could joy come from no external circumstances, but only my relationship with God? Well, I know that's what joy really is, but now it was tested. Because now I did not feel very joyful because I couldn't see anything. And I didn't know anything, and God wasn't speaking to me. So actually, my joy was actually dependent on my circumstances, not just on God. So it was, you know, it was a shock. You know, I was actually shocked about myself, you know, when I went through this. So 2 weeks into it, I okay, I've had enough. That's it. I don't care any longer. If I never see anything ever again, I don't care. It's just I surrendered. I gave up. I stopped fighting. I stopped asking. I didn't need to know. And I got to the point where, and I was sort of hoping, well, maybe if I do this, maybe I'll be able to see, but it really didn't work. You know, it was a little bit still there holding on, thinking, can I trick God, maybe? Yeah, I'll tell him, but I really, really want to know. But it didn't really work. So January comes along. I mean, I was miserable over Christmas. You know, I mean, literally, I went through December, lead up to Christmas. My wife really likes Christmas, and we have all the family home, and I was just not good. I was not good company. I was just miserable. You know, and I couldn't do anything about it. This was the problem. It's like normally it's like, yeah, something's going on. Yeah, I can rule this in my spirit and I can be fine. But I couldn't, you know, and they knew something was going on. I wasn't going to tell them what was going on. They just knew something was up. You know, my wife was really not very happy because it was like, you know, so January comes along, soaking room. I want to engage in peace in the soaking room, rest. So I wake up January the 1st. Engage God, hoping above hope that something I would be able to see. No. All I heard was rest. So I did. I didn't ask a question for that whole month. I didn't think about anything for the whole month. I just totally rested. My mind was completely still. Never asked a question. Didn't kick off because I surrendered. It was like, you know, I really did surrender. And this was the test. So, you know, scriptures like, you know, all who are weary and heavy laden, come to me and find rest. I knew that scripture, so I just rested. And I didn't do anything, I couldn't see anything, I didn't know anything, but it didn't matter. Now, that this was a really important thing, you know, and being at rest is, your identity is being gentle and humble and hot. And true peace and where identity and destiny are accepted and surrendered, that brings glory to God and not me. Because although I wasn't, no one would have known the motives of my heart, and I didn't know the motives of my heart, God exposed them. So I saw, actually, I needed to know. So that's why my soul and spirit couldn't, my spirit could never stay in heaven, because my soul would never allow it to stay there, because if I was staying there, I wouldn't know what it was doing. Then I wouldn't understand, and therefore I wouldn't be able to tell other people, and all the things I was, that was the process. So I really took on the yoke of Jesus, and I was surrendering, even though I wouldn't have seen anything or experienced anything. But the question would be, would I follow his lead and trust him just because he was him and because I couldn't see anything? And I was discovering, I think, yes, I can, because I got to that point. So I'm at that point, go through the whole month, it's great, and then I get to February. Now I'm thinking, February the 20th, I've got a promise that I'm going to get a breakthrough. And then God said to me, wait expectantly and I want you to fast. So fast until the 20th of February. So I thought, okay, I can do that. I've done a 40-day fast, 21 days or whatever, that's no problem. Which I was really cocky about it, you know. It was just like, yeah, that's easy. So I'm like, okay. So I sort of, you know, get the water cooler and I'm in my room and I'm just going through the process of fasting and everything like that. And, you know, first 7 or 8 days, you know, no problem. And it's just like everything was good. And then the water I used, I didn't clean the water container out properly, and so I poisoned myself. And it's literally, I mean, I don't get sick. I'm never sick. I haven't had sickness for 25 years. It's like, I don't get sick. So this was a real shock. And I'm like, so I poisoned myself, and I'm being violently sick. Although all I've been drinking is water, so I have no food, so I'm just being violently sick with water. So I'm dehydrated. You know, it's like my wife can hear me sort of being sick. She's like, are you all right? You know, yeah, shall I need to call the doctor? And then she called in the others of the leadership, and they were like, you need to do something about this. I'm like, no, I'm okay. So I'll get through it. It's all right. You know, and I, so like 8 days I'm being sick. I've not got no any water, no food. So I'm like feeling dire. I'm feeling like I'm dead. You know, it's like physically, I'm just totally exhausted. No strength left. You know, I'm sort of trying to suck ice cubes or something just to keep some water down. You know, it was bad. You know, it was really bad. And, you know, I started to sort of in that process, before I got into that, I thought, oh, I'm just going to review what's gone on in the last 2 years and this is going to be great, you know. So really, it was really bad. And I couldn't sleep because I was kept being sick and everything else. So I was physically really empty. I had no reserve left physically. And so I wouldn't advise you to do what I did. I mean, it's like, you know, I didn't call the elders or ask them to pray. I just thought, well, okay, I'm going to get through this. You know, because I'm not giving up now. I've been gone through 3.5 months of this. It's like, I'm not giving up for a bit of sickness. So, but I literally was at the end of myself physically. So I thought, well, okay, I can get through this. So I didn't fight. I didn't do anything. I just accepted it and went through it. Now, it felt like this was me being tested. And what sort of happened, I got to the point where, okay, I felt I need to deal with my ketubah, so I burnt it and I offered it up to God. You know, I let everyone went to work, I was on my own, so I crawled downstairs with this thing and sort of burnt this thing. I thought, well, that's it, like, I just need to let go of everything. I don't want anything holding me back. But when I burnt it, God actually challenged me over each of those 68 things. Actually, did I burn them and let them go? Or did I really still have an expectation? So literally, I dived and grieved over every one of those 68 things. Literally, I grieved over them as if something had died. Because it did. It was the hardest thing I ever did. Because I felt physically wrecked. Emotionally, now I'm totally wrecked. I'm grieving for 68 things. You know, and it was like overwhelming. Now, you know, this was sort of my little Garden of Gethsemane for me. Body, soul, and merit, mind, emotions, and will. Whole thing was, okay, are you willing to surrender? Now, I was willing to surrender, but I just got this small glimpse of what Jesus must have suffered when he took on all of our sin, sickness, pain, everything. And I'm just struggling with mine. And he took on billions of people's sickness, pain. No wonder he sweated blood in the garden. Because it was his soul as a son of man saying, I don't know if I can go through this. But he did. He chose to. He chose to accept it. You know, it was like, if that was Jesus' experience, he was a billion times more than what I was experiencing. But it was really bad. You know, it's like, my God, why have you forsaken me? That's what I felt. You know, I could identify with Jesus because he identified with me. That's why he said that. He identified with me and my soul in that when he cried out. God didn't ever forsake him. Father was with him right through the whole process. But he was identifying with me, so I identified with this. It felt like, oh, I'm at the end of myself. So really I was emotionally at the end of my rope. I didn't have any strength left. I couldn't even pray in tongues. I couldn't do anything. You know, so I just waiting with this February the 20th, please come. Because I'm not sure I can make it any longer than that. So I did. I had this sort of expectancy, hope that something, this breakthrough would come. So, you know, in this time, when I went through the fast in 2010, I was burning. Well, I went through the same thing. Night and day, it felt like intense fire inside and out. I was just burning hot because God was purifying my heart and purifying the motives of my heart. And I was being consumed by this fire to test what would remain. Because that's what fire does. It tests what will remain. So wood, hay, and stubble gets burnt up. Gold, silver, and precious stones remain. It just didn't feel very good. You know, but I embraced it. But it was sort of a very, very intense emotional grief. And each of my expectations just died one by one. Day after day after day. So each 68 points consumed. It was like waves of loss. I mean, it was, now I'm painting a really bad picture for you to agree to this, aren't I? But I don't think you probably will have to go through it as deep as I did, unless you fight for it and keep hold of it. If you surrender on day one, not 6 weeks into it. You know, whatever God takes you through, hey, if I'm going to go through this, I want to surrender. But in reality, you've got to really surrender. And the test is, will you, when you're faced with the reality of these things? Because it was a serious thing. It wasn't, I wasn't going through the motions. You know, literally, my wife was like, you're stupid, you could die. And I'm like, no, I'm all right, I will be okay. You know, I'm gonna work through this. I'm not going to give up. So literally, it was like, do you still trust me? Do you still love me? I was like, yes, I do. And I could honestly say, yes, I did. I didn't need to know anymore. I didn't need to ask God questions. I didn't need to know anything. I had no expectations of anything other than, I just want a relationship with you. I just want to have a relationship with you. So if none of my dreams are fulfilled, none of them were realized, if none of the prophecies ever came to pass, if my destiny never got fulfilled, and I seriously had to accept that that could be true, would I still love God? And the answer was yes. And I knew that. And I knew he still loved me if I never did any of that either. Because if you do not have a relationship with God which is unconditional, you don't really have a real relationship. You have a conditional relationship on him being nice to you and you doing things for him, which is not a relationship at all in love. It's conditional on behavior. So, you know, I faced those questions, and at the end of it, I seriously can answer it. Would I still trust God? Yes. Would he still trust me? Yes. Would I have love, joy, and peace, irrespective of any externals, just because I'm in a relationship with God? Actually, he is the source of love, joy, and peace. I don't need anything outside of him. I don't need anything that I'm doing to give me any of those things. They come purely from being in love with God and knowing he loves me. So I could rejoice, you know, and I started to rejoice, you know, and it was like, I'm coming up to February the 20th and I'm starting to rejoice. I don't know where I got the strength to rejoice, but I started to rejoice. And it was just like, I rejoiced in what I was going through. Would God still be a good God? Yes. He is a good God. He's not going to change just because my circumstances don't line up with him being good. He's still good. So God was really searching my heart. He was showing me my heart during this process. He was testing the motives of my heart. He was purifying and refining my heart. The pure in heart will see God. He wanted me to meet him face to face. And I'm not talking about his presence or meeting him on the throne or in the garden. I'm talking about meeting him face to face. And that's a whole different thing, which I had never done. Why? You know, the question, you know, I was like, why? What? So this dark cloud, this covering, this in dealing with the very essence of who I was, this was the key. I had to yield who he made me to be so that I was not going to get my identity from doing anything, but I knew who I was purely in relationship with him. And literally that's what went on. It was a total death, really. I knew I'd been crucified with Christ. This was my acceptance of that. I accepted it. I was not going to rule. I was not going to be in control. I was not going to do any of that stuff anymore. So my soul and spirit were daily engaging in heaven. And then I would come out and step back out. This was what changed all that. So, you know, my redemptive gift is prophet teacher. That's how God wired me. I'm self-aware in that way. I'm aware of the world that way. I engage things that way. So that's how I'm wired, you know, and that's what I surrendered. If I never am able to do that again, I still love you and I still trust you. You know? Now, if that was me. You got different redemptive gifts trigger different processes. So when I taught this, eventually I warned them. I said, look, you know your redemptive gifts, you've done redemptive gift surveys, you need to be aware that you may be tested in this area. So, a friend of mine, he's a ruler gift. And as he came, I see him, you know, every week for a discipleship thing, and we talk and chat. And he comes in and he's looking miserable. So I'm like, well, what's going on? Well, I can't rule. Nothing's working. It's not working. I can't rule. So I sort of I laughed. It wasn't very kind, but I said, oh, I think I know what you're going through. You done your cucumba? Yeah. Okay. So, did I warn you? Oh, this is that. Yeah. I advise you to surrender. He didn't. It took him a while before he surrendered. Even though he knew, he still had to go through the process of what surrendering meant for him. So if he never ruled ever again, would it make any difference? Was his identity ruler? It was. And therefore he wasn't ruling, he had no identity. I have another friend who was a servant gift. It's like, you know, again, I see him once a week. And as he comes in, I said, well, how's things going? He's like, well, all the things I was doing, suddenly God seems to have taken them all away and I'm not able to serve. It's like, all these things I was doing, I can't do it. So I said, well, how's that making you feel? And I'm sort of smiling to myself. Well, if I had to go through it, it's like, hey, come on. So I'm smiling. I said, well, you know, how do you feel about yourself when you're not serving? I said, well, not very good. I said, well, maybe that's a clue that you were getting your identity from serving rather than being a servant, because God made you a servant. And if you don't serve, you're still a servant because God made you one. It's not dependent on the serving. You're not a servant because you serve. You're a servant because God made you a servant. And if you don't serve, are you any less a servant just because you're not doing it? Well, he was. Because actually, his serving was his thing. So this is really what God is trying to get at. Are you getting your identity from being who I made you to be? But actually, you're doing that, and that gives you... So I'm stopping you doing it, so how do you feel now? I know you've probably been through times where God is maybe taking you into a season where things are different or things aren't working. Well, how does it make you feel? Well, this really, that was where my identity and security for Con. So now I identified that. I wasn't getting it there anymore. You know, my soul now was free. And literally, what happened, you know, when I get to the sort of the gist of it, I got to sort of February the 20th. I'll run through these. You can read them later. But I got through to the 20th of February. I went to sleep that night rejoicing. And I woke up and I was perfectly normal. I was not sick, I was not weak, my emotions were completely stable. I could see, I could engage heaven, just like that. So, you know, for a month, you know, I'd been completely physically drained and everything, I was instantly completely well. So I knew, although there was a physical element to it, this was more of a spiritual dynamic than a physical one. So I know God trusts me, because it's not about me, it's about Him. Now, I'm not saying I'm perfect, because this is about surrender so that He can continue to deal with me. But the very core essence, I gave up. So now I'm much more easily for Him to deal with things. It's much easier for Him to unveil things. You know, He reveals things, you know, in a way which before I wasn't able to allow Him to do. So I had to face these questions, but you know, it was worth it. You know, if God said, would you go through that again? I'd be like, absolutely I would. Because that day I woke up on the February the 20th, 2012, I felt more at peace and more whole and more integrated than I'd ever felt ever in my life. My spirit and soul were just together. I stepped into heaven. I engaged in heaven. I engaged the Father, and he took me to see wisdom. And wisdom gave me a seal in different things. And it was like, then I was taken to a throne, I was given an orb. Everything changed, because the level I was stuck at, all of a sudden now opened up to go into different levels with God and different things. You know, now, you know, I still, 4 years later, had to go through the deconstruction of my mind process. But it was the beginning of an ongoing journey. It really was worth it. You know, this being joined to the Lord, you know, it's like, it's so important. 2 Corinthians 7:16 says, I rejoice that in everything I have confidence in you. Now, I could truly say that. Now, if someone had asked me if that was true before I went through this process, I would have sworn it was. Because I didn't know that this was how things were working. That's why God had to get me into this place where He could reveal it. So this was just amazing. You know, this breakthrough came. I stepped into heaven. I've never stepped out of heaven ever since. My spirit is there. It's continued to be there. You know, everything changed from that perspective. And then I went into the dark cloud. You know, and I walked through the dark cloud, and I walked in to see the face of God. I met Him face to face, and just that one facet was just more than I could contain. But it was awesome. And it changed me, because it revealed something of my sonship in relation to creation. When I saw into His face, I saw reflected back who I am. And I came out of that changed and transformed. And then my whole life then changed, because then God started to ask me to do all the things I'm doing now. Up to that point, there was no way I was going to do that. I wouldn't have surrendered to do it. So everything then in my life that transpired into all the things I'm doing was a result of this whole process. And it was a result of Him taking me through the process, me fighting, resisting everything with my soul, and then eventually surrendering and giving up. Now, it really did change me forever. And then I remembered that eternal flame thing, and I thought, this is it. I've been in the eternal flame, and it was blue, which is really, really hot. So I understood at that point that this was the turning point in my life, where everything changed after that. And it really did. You know, all the things that I did, I became untethered from the earth so I could live in dual realms. I became unified spirit and soul. It was like my spirit and soul were quantumly entangled. Instantly heaven and earth were connected. Whereas before I was going in, coming out, going in. Now I'm just in and out at the same time, but in is out. So where I am there is flowing into here instantly. Because quantum entanglement is an instant thing. There is no time between heaven and earth when you're in heaven and you're on earth. So you do become a gateway. You know, I couldn't sit and answer people's questions every day not knowing what they're before. Before this, I would have been, I want to know your questions in advance. Now I know I do this here because it's easier to be able to read them all out. But in reality, I would have had to have had this if I was going to answer people's questions before, because I would have needed to know and I would need to go and find out. Because if I didn't, well, that would have dealt with my identity. Well, I don't know the answers. So that would have been a negative thing. Well, now if I don't know the answers, well, I know someone who does. It's like, if I can't give you any wisdom, well, go and ask God yourself, you know? So things really, really changed from that point, really dramatically. So I could stay in heaven, become a channel, touch the earth. You know, now everything can flow from that realm. You know, I'm such a different person than I was then. I'm so much more relaxed, you know, because I don't need to know. Hey, I can sit here with no slides. You know, I sit here with slides and don't talk about them, because I'm much more open to connect with people, because my soul isn't in the way. Whereas before, there would have been a filter of the soul, which was like, it would have affected how I related to people. I would not have been doing what I'm doing in engaging people around the world, online or in the flesh, if this hadn't happened. You know, I was very content to do things from home. I really wanted to do anything else. So from this point, God then challenged me about reaching out to people, doing the Engaging God program, mentoring people, all that stuff came as a result of me surrendering. So essentially things have expanded, things have increased, because my soul's not in the way. My soul actually resonates. This is how it works. My spirit resonates with things in heaven. Because I'm instantly connected, my soul resonates as well and comes into agreement. So heaven and earth is in agreement in my soul and spirit, which is how it's always intended to be, because Adam was able to walk in those realms. There was no separation for him until he decided to go and walk his own path, which was literally what my soul was doing. It was still operating in the independence of doing it myself. Even doing the good things, because it was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You know, so it wasn't just bad things, but it's still doing good things in your own strength, for your own motive, which was, this made me feel accepted and loved and gave me my identity and my purpose. So I would encourage you to look at your own life. Your journey will have many milestones of experience so far, and you'll have many things that God's already done. If you've gone through this process before, that's great. Some people call it the dark night of the soul or other things, because it is quite intense. You may have some similar, you may have completely different things. You may have done things in a different order in your life. God may have done things differently with you. But I think all of us need to embrace and be willing to embrace engaging that dark cloud experience, whatever it is for you, so that you can actually be free to live in dual realms as well. No. Because if you're not living in dual realms, you're not able to function as a son in the way God wants you to function in a son. You know, because your soul will have too big a part to play in it. So you can be proactive. You know, maybe if you're proactive, your journey won't be as difficult as mine, or your experience won't be as difficult as mine. Smiling. Thank you. But probably it will be easier, because you know, I didn't know. You know, I didn't know what God was doing. I had to figure it out as I was going, come to the conclusion, I give up. You know, but you may know. And if you embrace God and say, God, I want you to separate my soul and spirit. I want you to deal with my soul, because I want to be whole. I want to be complete. I want to live in dual realms. I want to be like Jesus, knowing your heart and functioning out of your heart. So I would encourage you, let's take a break for, we've got, say 20 minutes or so. You know, you can go and do whatever you want to do. But if you want to do the next session of separating soul and spirit, just maybe have a little conversation with God, in which you sort of say, yeah, you have permission to do this. You know, and if he does it all in this one session, you're gonna be rejoicing at the end of it. If it starts off a process, well, then you know the process is a good one, and at the end of it, you'll benefit from it greatly. But all of us will need to actually get to the point where we actually truly do surrender. And whatever it takes to get you to that point, you've got to be willing to say, God, I'm up for it. And that's a big thing to say, so I would encourage you not to do it lightly, but to be asking God to say, is this, do you want me to go through this process now? Because he may not. So don't force it. If it's not something that's seasoned for you to do it, then you can just listen, and eventually you'll perhaps use the information when you are ready. So I don't want to force anyone to do anything that God doesn't want you to do. So have a conversation with God and just see. You know, does he want you to embrace this? And in the next session, we will actually go through an engagement where we separate soul and spirit and look to sever those ties so that you can at least begin the process and the journey to living in dual realms. Because tomorrow we'll do some sessions about, well, what do you do in dual realms? And how do you travel in the spirit? And how do you do some of this stuff? Because you need to be enthroned in heaven, you know? And that enthronement process is one which brings you into the position of sonship, which then you can start operating in authority as a son. Okay? You're all looking full of joy.